I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Eitan Krasilovsky. He is with the Forest Guild, and Phyllis Ashmead. She's partnership coordinator for the Southwest Jemez Mountains Restoration Project with the Santa Fe National Forest. And they are here to tell us, among other things, about a free public workshop that is happening this Saturday, the 16th of November, from 9 to 4 at Santa Fe Community College. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to be here.
Now, the workshop is called Living with Fire in Northern New Mexico, Fire, Forests, and Communities. And we spoke not too long ago to the wonderful scientist Craig Allen, who was talking about fire and the nature of fire and how natural fire is in northern New Mexico and the results of both decades of fire suppression and climate change, which is kind of a perfect storm.
That's right. And he'll be one of our speakers on Saturday. We're really excited to have him. The first part of our workshop will focus on the science of what we know in fire and forests.
Yeah, the arc of the day is to start with build on some foundational knowledge by bringing in a lot of the top scientists who've done place-based science in northern New Mexico, then talk about management of our forests and how we're responding to what the science is telling us, and finally ending the day with how wildfires and prescribed fires are affecting our communities.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a really important and beautiful thing that you're involved with, because I don't know how many examples we can talk about where science tells us about certain things and then the actual bureaucracies and managers of our daily lives don't pay any attention or don't respond or take 100 years to respond. And this is a case where you're taking what we know about, for example, climate change, drought, fire, and so on, and then thinking really hard about how to apply it and how to communicate it to citizens. What's the actual work that you're doing?
Well, in the Forest Service, we've done a lot of work around and learning around prescribed fire and wildfire, obviously. And here in northern New Mexico, just this summer, we had 3 major wildfires. We respond to fires, whether, you know, from an emergency standpoint, we'll respond to a fire if it's an unplanned fire, but with prescribed fire, it's something that we use science to help apply it to reduce future fire risks in the forests,
right,
and to create more resilient forests. So that's one of the outcomes of applying a planned fire such as a prescribed fire.
Why do we need prescribed fires, given that fires are in fact natural to the environment? Sooner or later, lightning strikes and things like that, even without careless campers and whatnot.
Yeah, that's a great question. Fire has been a part of our ponderosa pine and frequent fire ecosystems for a long time, but right now, when fires start, they become very high-intensity, large events that can wreak havoc on watersheds and communities and homes and put people's lives at risk. So in order to mitigate that, there's broad consensus in New Mexico to thin our forests, reduce a lot of our small and medium-sized trees, take them out of the forest, and then return fire to the ecosystem and maintain those ecosystems with periodic entries of fire. And hopefully they get to a point where if we do get that lightning strike or that careless camper, the forest can resist that and we can use that fire in the ecosystem and allow it to do its thing.
And one of the reasons I just wanted to add that we have these large fires is because for over 100 years we've been suppressing them, because they were once low-intensity fires that would just clear out the understory and create these openings. But since we've moved into these forests and these areas, we have a responsibility to protect, you know, life and property. And so Smokey Bear did a great campaign by Only You Can Prevent Wildfire or Forest Fire. And that's exactly what the Forest Service was initially set up to do, was to protect the forest from wildfire. So we've realized that fire is an important part of the landscape, and the reason that we're in such a situation as we are today is because we've excluded it from the landscape for about 100 years.
I think it must make your job and make the whole situation so much more difficult that people have built houses in the middle of the woods, which would naturally be fire areas that every so and so many years would burn.
It does make it more difficult to do the work on the land that the Forest Service wants to do. There's a term for this area that we use. It's called the wildland urban interface. And it's not the best term, but it's the one we use. And it basically refers to where human values on the landscape are interfacing with wildland vegetation that can burn. And that can be a cell tower, it can be a road, it can be a municipal watershed, like our own municipal watershed here in Santa Fe, mm-hmm. and it can be homes.
Mm-hmm. Is there a movement afoot to actually start excluding those kinds of structures or new structures from fire areas?
I'm not sure about that. I think more likely there's a move afoot to educate the community about building homes in these areas, and if you are already in these areas, how can you make your home more fire adapted?
And how do people do that?
That's a great question. So there are a lot of programs already being promoted in New Mexico to get homeowners, county planners, architects, insurance agents, landscapers more aware that they're building and maintaining homes in this fire-prone area. Some of those are called FireWise, Ready, Set, Go. And there's another kind of umbrella effort called Fire Adapted Communities. And the idea behind the Fire Adapted Community Program is, how do we make our communities more resilient to fires ahead of fire season so that people are prepared and they've already reduced risk around their homes, widened maybe some of their access roads, talked to their insurance agents. And there's a lot of people working on this. The city of Santa Fe has a great new cost share program with landowners trying to help reduce risk around people's homes. The Santa Fe County has a very extensive program identifying high-risk neighborhoods home by home. They have an excellent website using a Google Earth interface where you can zoom in on your house and see what the risk is and what you can do to reduce that risk.
Can I access that?
Yeah.
Not that I live in the woods, because I don't at all, but...
So, yeah, if you live in some of the communities that straddle the mountain range around Santa Fe, if you go to Santa Fe County Wildland Division, they have a website where you can look on property assessments and go to your neighborhood.
Okay. It seems to me that insurance companies, more than any other kind of, like, major corporate folks in this country, are aware of things like this, of forests, of fire, of climate change, and so on, because they're the ones who are going to have to pay out.
The insurance industry is definitely aware of this. Some companies are taking fire risk into their pricing with customers. Some insurance companies are even staging wildland fire engines in communities during wildfire season. Thompson Ridge this past year on the Valles Caldera and Santa Fe National Forest is an example of that, where there was an engine in that community that was from an insurance company. But there's still a long way to go. There's still a lot of work that can be done with homeowners and insurance agents to reduce risk.
The other thing I'd like to mention, too, is the fact that the men and women who fight these fires, they put their lives at risk. And we've experienced the highest number of fatalities this year.
That's right.
And, you know, that's really an important factor for people, you know, who live in these wildland urban interfaces to think about the people who have to protect their property during a wildfire and their lives that they're putting on the line. We don't want to have another person die as a result of this activity.
We're talking to Phyllis Ashmead and Eitan Krasilovsky about the free public workshop called Living with Fire in Northern New Mexico that's coming up this Saturday. Now, Phyllis, you are with the Southwest Jemez Mountains Restoration Project. That's a mouthful. What is it? What are you doing?
Well, this is a project that was funded in 2010 by Congress, and it was a result of a collaborative effort. And I have to say, I've just been so impressed with a number of partners that have been involved and engaged in this project, and in particular, the Forest Guild, New Mexico Forest and Watershed Restoration Institute, the Nature Conservancy of New Mexico, and Wild Earth Guardians and the collaborative that's worked together on this project. And so in 2010, it was one of 30 that was funded. It's a collaborative forest landscape restoration program that Congress has funded to actually step out in front of these huge fires that are becoming prevalent across the landscape. 30 proposals were submitted, and we were one of 10 that was funded in 2010. So this is a 210,000-acre project that encompasses the entire Valles Caldera, about 86,000 acres, 110,000 acres on the Santa Fe National Forest, and 14,000 acres on state and private land and Jemez Pueblo lands.
That's a lot of area.
It is a lot of area.
Does it all need restoration?
Well, there's different aspects to this project. So one of the things we wanted to do is to reduce the risk of these uncharacteristically large wildfires and be able to restore the natural fire regimes to the area. We want to increase forest diversity and old growth characteristics of our forests. One thing that's unique on our project compared to some of the others is that we're also doing a lot of restoration, and we want to improve fish and wildlife habitat, improve water quality and watershed functions. And another important thing is to protect cultural sites. That's very unique to our project because the Jemez Mountains are the home to the Jemez Pueblo people. And so one of the things we're doing is to try to remove the fuels from these sites so that they can be more resilient when fire does occur there.
I mean, that's a huge issue too, because a journalist friend of mine was telling me that there can be a whole different attitude on certain pueblos toward firefighting.
Yeah, we actually have been working hand in hand with the Jemez Pueblo, and we're very sensitive to their needs of protecting these cultural sites and their cultural values. So that's one of our objectives.
One of the risks to the cultural sites in the Jemez Mountains is erosion. So after fires, you get rain, our monsoons, and the rain can mobilize a lot of our soils and carry them off our mountains into our streams and rivers. And a lot of the cultural sites are embedded in the top layer of our soil. So these large, uncharacteristic wildfires have a secondary effect of wiping away kind of the cultural history on the land.
Not only that, just wiping away people's personal property and other valuable, you know, cars. I mean, huge rivers of black ash laden ash have gone through after the Los Conchas fire, for instance.
Yeah, and you showed me before we went on the air a photograph of a black waterfall.
Mm-hmm, yeah, that was taken this summer, and it was from a result of the 2011 Los Conchas fire. Of the ash-laden stream coming over across Cochiti Mesa down into Cochiti Canyon.
Now, I mean, when you look at something as big and as destructive as the Las Conchas fire, and you have black waterfalls and all this erosion and so on, what are the stages through which restoration efforts go? Like, what does it look like? Because that's not a quick process where, you know, a road goes, you repave the road.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a good point. It's a long process. It starts out on federal land with complying with two acts, the National Environmental Policy Act and the Historic Preservation Act. And both of those acts are applied across all federal lands, both on the Valles Caldera and National Park Service land and also on the Forest Service land. So that process is happening right now. Mm-hmm. It can be a challenge to do that process at the scale we want to do it at, because no one has been working at the 210,000-acre scale yet. This is new ground for the Santa Fe National Forest and for all the collaborators. So we're working through that process to get a signed decision that can then lead to tree thinning, prescribed fire, and using fire on the landscape.
Mm-hmm. So the National Environmental Policy Act, another acronym is NEPA, and it's a key element in our restoration efforts, as Eitan just mentioned. It answers the question, how are we going to get this done, and what are the social, environmental, and economic effects of doing so? And in our case, we plan to have our draft out by sometime this winter, and then it's out for public comment. So we'll take the comments and relook at the NEPA and we hope to have the final out sometime later this year.
Now, when you have public comments, do they tend to be useful? Do they bring in ideas that you hadn't thought of?
Absolutely. That's the purpose of these comments. You know, we're already aware that the public has concern about smoke from one of our proposed actions is to reintroduce fire. So we understand that the public does have a concern about smoke. And, you know, some members of the public have concerns about thinning trees. Some members of the public have concern about their favorite campsite might be temporarily closed for restoration. So the public comments are really valuable for us.
So what happens after the public comments are received?
So we take those comments and then we analyze them again. We make sure that we're not missing anything. And then we incorporate those into the final NEPA document.
How do you keep the prescribed burns from burning out of control? I remember, was it the Vista Grande fire? The Cerro Grande fire. Mm-hmm. I happened to be in Germany at that time. Mm-hmm. And my uncle said, hey, you guys are on the news. And I watched the German news, and the headline on the television was basically, the Americans seem to be about to burn down their nuclear weapons lab in an effort to control forest fires. A little bit of German dark humor in there, but nevertheless.
Yeah, that's a great question. And unfortunately, the use of prescribed fire is always high profile, and where it hasn't gone exactly right remains in people's minds. But the Forest Service has a long track record of safely implementing prescribed burns, and they have a variety of techniques, including they monitor the weather, they ignite only certain conditions with air temperatures and humidities, they have a burn plan, they use a variety of ignition techniques, and they also have a lot of resources mobilized, like fire engines and water tenders and people with hand tools to control the fire. If you look at the big picture, you know, across the whole country, our land management agencies, including state agencies and even nonprofits, use fire across the country, and fire escapes are a very small percentage. We're talking less than 10% of prescribed fires escape. So it's important to keep in mind the big picture.
New use of the phrase fire escape.
When controlled burning does escape, you know, it's never a good thing, and there's been terrible incidents that have led to the loss of homes and human life. So it's a really important responsibility, and it's a really, you know, the Forest Service is a great wealth of knowledge in this area.
To what extent is wildlife habitat part of the picture when you're thinking about restoration projects?
It's very much a part of restoration projects because, you know, we have to look at, for instance, New Mexican spotted owl. We, in restoration, we want to make sure that we can protect those habitats. There's several new animals that will be listed or are being listed. We have the Jemez Mountain salamander. We have possibly we have plans for the New Mexican jumping mouse and the New Mexican spotted owl. Those are animals that are on list, threatened and endangered lists, and we have to protect their habitat so that they can survive.
Mary Charlotte, if I could also add that a big component of the project that Phyllis is talking about, the Southwest Jemez Restoration Project, is monitoring. And there is a lot of excellent work being done by the Santa Fe National Forest, the Valles Caldera National Preserve, and a suite of partners mm-hmm. to monitor a whole suite of wildlife, from insects to bears and mountain lions. And every year, the Santa Fe National Forest and the Caldera put together an all-hands monitoring meeting that is open to the public and has amazing data. And you can see what these populations are doing, where the animals are going, how are they interacting. Mm-hmm. Fascinating information that's all part of this effort.
I've become aware recently of the term citizen science. Do you have any citizen scientists collecting data or helping with this?
Yeah, so there's data being collected at many different levels. Some of it's at the professional level. There are some researchers engaged, you know, from academia, but then there's also these citizen scientists. And The Forest Service and the Valles Caldera use kind of a whole cadre of volunteers to do their stream restoration efforts, and the volunteers also help monitoring. The Forest Guild has had a Youth Conservation Corps crew stationed at Jemez, at the Jemez Ranger District for about 12 or 13 years now, and every summer those youth aged 16 to 18 years old work on the National Forest and help with monitoring. The Wild Earth Guardians has also had a Youth Conservation Corps crew starting last year on the Valles Caldera, and they're helping collect data as well. So it's really many levels of data and lots of people engaged.
The Nature Conservancy of New Mexico, too, has been instrumental in monitoring for the Jemez Mountain Salamander.
It's quite amazing. You, Phyllis, before we went on the air, showed me a list of so many different organizations, which I forbade you to read aloud, read aloud on the air because it would take up the whole show. But what's mind-boggling about this is you guys are actually working together in an effective way to protect our forests and educate the public.
Yeah, that's really an important part of it. And again, the Living with Fire Northern New Mexico workshop on Saturday is another great example of how this education is occurring with the help of the collaborators and the scientists and the land managers with the Forest Service and the other agencies that will help educate the community about fire-adapted communities.
So this workshop is for anybody and everybody.
Right. You could be a homeowner. You could be just an interested member of the public who cares about the National Forest. You can be an architect, a landscaper. You can want to start a business. You could be a student. So yeah, it's really just a, you know, to try to get everyone and kind of share information with everyone. We really want this, you know, the Saturday the 16th to be a dialogue. After every speaker's presentation, there's going to be a question and answer period. We don't want this to be a one-way flow of information. And then we're capping off the day with a talk to the speaker session where we're going to break up into small groups. You can find the speaker that interested you the most and ask them more detailed questions.
So this is on Saturday from 9 to 4 at the Santa Fe Community College. Phyllis Ashmead is Partnership Coordinator for the Southwest Jemez Mountains Restoration Project with the Santa Fe National Forest. And Eitan Krasilovsky is with the Forest Guild. Is there a website people can go to for more information?
Yeah, great question. So it is livingwithfire.eventbrite.com.
Event, B-R-I-T-E.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Just like your mother didn't spell it. Eventbrite.com.
Yeah, and you can access an agenda there as well as register. It's free, but we're asking people to register just so we have a proper headcount.
And I will link to that on my website as well. Phyllis and Eitan, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you.